Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and I thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's world, and I mean that every time I say it. And I would also like to thank the sponsor of our show today. How appropriate it is that it's Habitat for Humanity Tucson. They are longtime and valued partners of Mrs. Green's world, and we appreciate everything they do to strengthen our community in many impactful and lasting ways, including what you are going to hear about from our guest today. It's a perfect segue. So please join me once again in welcoming back to our show, T. Van Hook. T. is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity Tucson, and trust me when I say she is always up to something, and I say that laughing and with great joy because she's always up to something. Are you laughing or are you yawning because you're so tired?
I am always up to something,
you
and
are.
I'm laughing and yawning. You can't tell the difference usually.
It's like we were talking before air, true disclosure, transparency. We were talking about how we're always both so much up to something that a day at home up to nothing in our pajamas sounds really good, and who else out there can't relate to that. Right?
Absolutely. And it would be such a treat, except I think I might feel a little guilty.
I know. That's the sickness of the overachievers. So it's great to have you back in studio with me. And I really am eager. There's always something new. When you come back, there's always news. It's not just about Habitat Humanity Tucson and you build homes and give people a hand up, not a handout. It's really about global impact. And the thing that I pulled from it is lasting. It's about ending poverty cycles, not about giving people a handout. And I love that. And I say it, I think, every time. So tell us a little bit about the Tucson organization, because there are new listeners.
There are. And in Tucson, we've been building homes, community, and hope for 38 years. I'd like to think 28 years. That's about how long I've been involved, but 38 years. And we've been doing the global impact since the day we started. But 28 years in Mexico. And as you know, you were just with us about a month and a half ago. We had our folks here from Mexico. And just this recently on World Habitat Day, we had our friends here from Bangladesh really making some global impact. And I know we're going to have John Armstrong from Bangladesh on the show coming up. And we're really excited about what we're doing. Just like you, we can't act alone here in Tucson. We act and think globally. Everything we do impacts the entire earth. And it's critical to us. To end poverty, we have to both work on the local scene, working with local families. But everyone that we serve here in Tucson has a global story, global connections. And the more we're connected around the earth through this radio show, through the internet, and through just our global connections, our family, our friends, and everything that we do, the materials that we use, the impact that we have on water and the earth and the air, it's really important that we think that way. And here in Tucson, we're making sure that the homes we build to end homelessness here and to end the cycle of poverty here, everything we're doing is impacting our global partners as well.
And you know, you referred to the people from Mexico. You hosted a lovely dinner at your home, and the guests sat at our table. So Chatty Cathy got to interview them. I said, I know I'm asking a lot of questions, but that's what I do for a living. And it was very interesting to me, and I don't want to get off topic of World Habitat Day, but a topic for another show, should they return, the difference and the challenges they have in Mexico. And it really isn't just because of the, you know, the proportion of poor people to wealthy people. It's about a mindset of philanthropy, which if you live in the United States, no matter what, there's a mindset of philanthropy on the part of millions of us. You and I were talking about a little bit, whether you're a $5 a month philanthropist, because that's what you can afford, or a $500,000 a year philanthropist, and the struggles they have and the challenges they have because of that mindset of what it means and the lack of trust. So it was a fascinating night for me.
You know, and I think across the world, it's exactly what World Habitat Day is about. Our partners in Habitat get that. And our mission across the globe, here locally in Tucson, we can raise dollars locally. Our partners in Mexico, in Bangladesh, and across the world don't have that luxury. In Mexico, they can raise part of their funds, and part of their funds come from donors across the globe. In Bangladesh, for example, they cannot legally raise funds spent in Bangladesh. So Habitat Bangladesh, and when our partner from Bangladesh is here, he can explain, they can't legally use money raised in Bangladesh in Bangladesh. So every penny has to come from outside of the country. So the laws are different, the cultures are different across the globe. And I think that's why the UN 30 years ago declared International Habitat or World Habitat Day. It's a UN declared day, the first day in the first Monday in October. And, you know, we've celebrated it on Friday with 350 volunteers coming out and having a really exciting day here in Tucson, raising the walls on six houses and amazing energy to kick off our new subdivision. But it's really to mark a really special occasion around the world where we bring awareness to the needs of safe, decent shelter for people around the world. And it's critical. And it's critical as we have changing climates. And it's critical, as we saw in Mexico City, after a disaster like the major earthquakes that have hit there recently. It's like we see with the hurricanes that have been pounding the United States, where you need shelter, we need safe shelter for individuals, and we can't think of ourselves alone. And we can't think, oh, we need to be reactive. We need to now mobilize here or mobilize there when they've had a disaster. We need to think proactively and say we need to end a situation on this earth where not everyone has safe, decent housing. And then we need to stretch ourselves philanthropically when a disaster happens. We can't just react and say, wow, there's a disaster here, I'm going to shift the resources I have to react here or react there. Oh, I've heard about a situation in a country where there's this group that's being displaced or this famine that's happened. We have to look globally and say, there are people around this globe that don't have shelter. There are people in my neighborhood, in my community, that don't have shelter. What can I allocate from my resources? Like you said, maybe it's $5 a month. Maybe it's $5 a year. Here in Tucson, we have a gentleman on Social Security that lives in an assisted living facility. And every year, at the end of the year, he calculates up what all of his bills are, sends family members holiday gifts, whatever he's going to do, and sends me a note at the end of the year with whatever he has left over. And last year, it was $13 and some change, and he sends me a little note. And I always call him at the end of the year and thank him. His $13 and some change was just as valid as someone sending me $40,000. In fact, that gift means as much to me and the person that moves into a home as a big gift. He's given from the heart. He's given what he has.
So true, my friend. So true. I mean, that is really giving. And as you said, the only way, I love this expression, is to end poverty is to get people out of it. And that's at the crux of what Habitat for Humanity does. It's just not giving a house. You know, we've talked about this on the show before, but with Habitat for Humanity and the model, you engage people in the process, because as we had learned behavior growing up, if you grew up in poverty, there were learned behavior, and we've talked about the need for training people about electricity and how to cut down on that bill, because those bills become the responsibility of the homeowner, the repairs, all of those things become learning opportunities for your families. And you don't just say, hi, hope you like your house, you know, and hope you can make the mortgage payment and all that. It's a very systemic and integrated approach, which I think is why it's lasting. What about, T, I'd love to ask you this, because you do travel globally. And is there any way to even equate the need for affordable housing here versus globally, even before the earthquake and the hurricanes? And I'm thinking about, we do have needs here, but there's always We have a lot of shelters. I'm not minimizing or in any way trying to act like it's not a big deal if you're homeless. But in terms of numbers and scale, how do we relate? How do we compare globally? I mean, are we truly blessed and should be in gratitude? Or is it growing? Give me your sense of the need here versus in some of the global communities you've visited.
Wow, it's a big question. And I think it's a...
I've been asking big questions these days.
That's a big question.
The guests I had yesterday, three times I said, that's a big question. But it is the global thinking that you do.
It is. And I look at it this way. We are doing what we can today in our neighborhood and not forgetting what we can do globally. So here in Tucson, our model is that we take 10% of what's unrestricted and we apply it into our world fund.
Got it.
So if someone makes a donation and they say, I'm sponsoring this house, the Women Build House, which you've been involved with.
Right.
That goes restricted straight to the house. But if someone says, I'm giving you $50 to do with as you want, or $100, let's take $100. I'm giving you $100 to apply to what needs
to your mission.
Your mission.
Right.
We're going to take 90 of those dollars and put them locally because that's our mission. And we're going to take 10 of those dollars and we're going to apply them to the global mission.
That's so awesome, though. It's think globally, act locally, and then act globally a little bit.
And in Tucson, we've decided to then take 25% of those dollars and put them to Mexico because we feel an ongoing commitment to Mexico. And Mexico is making great strides in supporting themselves. It has one of the fastest growing middle classes in the world. And they're making great strides in building industry and other things. And then we're taking 75% of that and applying it to Bangladesh, where they're just really starting to make inroads in serving minority populations, securing land, securing fresh water and sanitation for children and for families. And we chose that. We looked at some of the most needy countries, the countries with the lowest housing rates, with the highest infant mortality rates and other things. And we chose Bangladesh because they really didn't have a champion in the U.S. And we chose that one. And we looked at several, and there wasn't a larger scale habitat in the U.S. at the time that was supporting them. And so we voted on that. And that's
sort
of the habitat.
And how long of a commitment is that? Do you commit every year? Do you do a long term? How long do you commit to support a habitat in a country?
Well, we chose here in Tucson, and there are different models, but we chose to make a 3-year net stretch to a 4-year commitment. And that way they have a chance to do some long term planning.
What can you do in a year?
We do a strategic plan that's 3 to 4 years, and we thought that gave them an opportunity to do the same. And I think we'll renew that. I don't want to speak on behalf of the board, but that's in our plans. We're not looking at any other
commitment. Next year, I mean, you might be looking at Puerto Rico. How sad is it to say? I mean, the more I read about the devastation there, and I have a very dear friend who's all of her relatives live there except her own immediate family, and, you know, which is a segue to... I don't know if you've talked with JJ about this, who's at the head of your building projects, but I wonder, it's being talked a lot on the national news, about the global impact of these tragedies on things like wood, like supplies, literally things to buy. And people will get knocked up the side of the head when they start realizing the price of lumber is going to go up. I mean, electrical supplies. The demand is going to rise, so you know the prices will go up.
Well, Mrs. Green, we've just had this conversation. We're having it on a regular basis. There are two things people should be aware of. In July, we pre-ordered or prepaid for our lumber and our plywood for our build for our World Habitat Day. And between July and our build...
That was a good move.
Yeah.
Little did you know.
The price of plywood went up more than 100%.
You are kidding.
More than $10
a
sheet.
I had no idea.
So we were very fortunate that happened. Another thing that people should be aware of, and I just, you know, donor beware, and I want people to know this, that when people are looking at nonprofits to make a donation to, and they talk about administrative overhead, I always caution folks when they say, oh, this nonprofit has this overhead rate and this one has this other overhead rate. Look a little deeper. Because in order for us to protect that wood that we were using on the site for World Habitat Day, we had to have security because the price of the commodities we use, the wood and lumber, skyrocketed. So we have to have security out for the nights before. You know, that's a lot of lumber to have on the site for a big build day.
Which goes then as an administrative overhead cost.
It's an administrative overhead cost.
Great point. Great point.
So people, you know, will say, oh, wow, that, you know, some of the administrative overhead costs. When people complain about other nonprofits that may have a 25% overhead rate or other things, and some of the disability charities or some of the organizations that help, you know, military service members that may have been injured or other things, and they'll say, wow, that administrative overhead is really high. And I'll say, well, do they take, you know, injured service members and their families on trips? Do they do those things? That's administrative cost. How much does it cost to take a service member who's lost his limbs and his children on a trip? That transportation, specialty vehicles.
Yeah, I'd pay that overhead.
Specialty airfares.
it's an accounting function.
People need to take a look at those things.
I could not agree with you more.
So I
could not agree with you more.
I would ask people to take a look at that.
Drill down a little bit more.
Drill down a little and take a look at those things.
What you got. And I know even with school districts, when I was involved in fighting for more education money, they'd say, look at how much money goes to their admin. And I, bus drivers, they go in admin. The food service workers, they go in admin.
School nurse. You want your children to have, you know, a school nurse?
Yeah, and let the kids go and cook their own darn meals. So anyway, we can't digress.
No, we can't.
You and I can really do. But what about the, how crucial is the community to Habitat's work? It's one of the things I love to talk about. So we can spend as much time as you want because you could not do what you do without the community. And I don't just mean on a build day. So talk to us about your need for community support and what are some of those most pressing needs.
Well, I always say to folks, we build homes, community, and hope. And that hope comes in the form of community. And so they're inseparable. We can't build community without hope, and we can't have hope without community. And it's so exciting to me to have folks come out on World Habitat Day, having 350 people, the energy they bring.
Could you start planning those days around my calendar? Could you get that together, please? I mean, there's my ego. It's like when I got the notice, I love that. We have our own Habitat for Humanity build day with the Chapman community team coming up. I think it's November 5th. So that excitement is there, but I'd love to get involved in another one that's not just that one. So go on.
Seeing folks come down the street, putting on their hard hats, their gloves, putting on their eye protection.
Supercharged,
you know, rallying the troops. People always ask me, you know, don't you have a fundraising dinner? I say, we do. It starts at 3 a.m. We throw a bagel at you. We get you geared up, you know. Get
if you're
you
really
work.
Good, you might get a donut.
Yeah, put a hammer in your hand, and you know it's great excitement. Get a home buyer out there. You know, one of our home buyers talking about what the house means to them, and the sound of those hammers when they get going is just terrific excitement. And at Habitat, there's a place for everyone. People will tell me, I can't drive a nail. I can't do this. You know, the pen is mightier than the hammer sometimes, and you can sign in volunteers. We have folks out handing out T-shirts, handing out water. We have a photo booth going. You can take some photographs. You can just be there to cheer. I always tell the story, you've heard it before, of my mother who was a volunteer long before I was. She couldn't glue two pieces of paper together. And
that's really sad.
The first time she came out to volunteer, my sister and I debated, you know, should we call them ahead? And she came back from her first build day and she was so excited. She was going to go again the following Tuesday. And I'm like, you know, Connie, you built? And she's like, oh no, you know, it took me like 10 minutes to figure out I couldn't hammer a nail into a board. And I said, what are you going to do next week? She goes, I make great deli sandwiches and I'm going to make some sandwiches and take them out and feed the crew. And I thought she
That's
found
a great
her
example of what someone can do is go out and feed them. And I like anything around food. So yes,
Oh. We take a mandatory break at 9 mom. O'clock every morning. You know, bring out some orange slices and ice-cold bottled water, and you've made friends for life.
You did not say bottled water on my show. Oh. We're working on that. Okay. But that is something.
You can edit that out.
You know. No, we won't edit that out, but it's fun because I love one of your new team members, Carolyn. And we're talking about, is there a viable alternative to that? And we're going to try and work on it because it's another step, because you are about conservation and not waste. And in your offices, you live that.
We do.
So it's transparency. And that's always a big one for events. It's one of the biggest challenges. People ask me all the time, what can you do? And it involves some extra effort and sometimes some extra cost.
Well, and during the week, we have the big bins, and we bring in ice, and we have, you know, we fill them with water, and we have, everybody has their individual thermoses. But with 350 people there, if 10 people forget their thermos, and dehydration
Houston,
is a big
issue. Problem.
We've got a problem.
We can't say that anymore. Houston, you've got a problem, because they really do have a problem. But there's other ways. So I think, let's talk, we always want to give a shout out to the Habastore, because if there's anybody in the Tucson area, or if you're planning to come to the Tucson area and you're a treasure hunter, go there, because you never know what treasure you're going to find. It's not just building materials and outdoor furniture and couches. You can find treasures that people donated that we hope your team didn't catch so that the prices are right.
Right, but now we have Ethan Allen furniture at maybe 10% of what they're selling it in the store. Beautiful items. We've had
Ethan Allen furniture.
Oh, Ethan Allen. We had an Ethan Allen donation valued at more than $100,000 of beautiful items. Beautiful items. Rugs, chairs.
Wow.
Cabinetry. Beautiful items from Ethan Allen.
So there. I mean, you never know. You never know, and you have to go frequently. So there's the help with the build. There's donating to the Habastore. And shopping at the Habastore. It's a two-part thing. And I mean, please, people, if you're listening, I might get the whiny voice on. Don't throw anything in the garbage, because it's the quintessence of one man's trash, another man's treasure. And I'll never forget the story we told on the show one day about someone's came in very, very poor, and their child had put like Iron Man or Superman or somebody, plastic figure, in the toilet. And getting it out, they broke the toilet. They couldn't go buy another toilet, so where did they come? And they got it for like $10. So that's, toilets are not affordable if you're in that socioeconomic range. So there's something for everybody. The person that can pay for the high-end item and be so happy because it's a bargain, Ethan Allen Furniture. But then for the population that really needs it, and they need a toilet. I mean, it's the stories abound, and well, you know many of them.
There's a beautiful section right now on Upcycle, and when I was a child, I loved those plastic horse figurines that young girls collect.
Yes.
And someone brought in a whole box of those plastic horse figurines. And that's the kind of thing you would think would go to the dump. You know, what am I going to do with my teenage daughter or my tween daughter's plastic horse figurines? About 12 inches tall, and we've all had them.
I know just what you mean.
So one of our volunteers drilled through their bodies and took these inexpensive lamps that you can take apart, the just plain stainless steel lamps where you can put on the different colors of shades and different things.
You gotta be kidding me. They made a lamp out of them.
They drilled through them and put the horses on the lamps. They are the best DIY I've seen in the longest time, and they've been flying out the door. So there's
That's another whole section of
DIY projects where they've taken odd door pulls, two or three pieces of mosaic tile, not enough to do any project, and random cabinet doors, made the coolest 1970s style mid-century trays. There's a whole bunch of DIY
pictures ever. Is the picture of you and I, not to just make it all personal about us, of when you had the fundraiser with the doors. That's the night I met Kevin Walters, who has become a friend. But you and I got behind it, and there was an artist redid doors and could bid on them. I mean, so we've mentioned building, we've mentioned donating, we've mentioned shopping there, and then we've mentioned
Upcycle.
Volunteering, getting people to come in, like it's their job, and they come in every day, or several times a week. But the core of volunteers that you have, that's money that goes directly to the bottom line because you don't have to pay somebody. And
absolutely.
They're responsible and they come in and blah, 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 blah. So I think it's really unbelievable. In terms of money, you always need money.
We need money. And this year,
let's be honest,
this year more than ever, I think we're going to need local support and we're going to need our regular donors to really step up and help. A lot of support is leaving this community to help the disaster, and we're really thrilled that people are stepping up and helping. What we'd like for people to know that is that Tucson is very generous. We've always helped when there's a crisis, but we can't forget the local needs and remembering the local needs, not just Habitat Tucson, but the other nonprofits that are serving our community. So we're asking people to really stretch a little. If you normally give to a local charity, please give that regular donation and make that extra amount that you're giving to help with disaster relief an extra gift.
You know, I want to make it like a little bit personal in terms of following up with that. And it involves a change in mindset. And a perfect example is I was in Taos this summer with our daughters. Two of them live there. And one of them needed a bed frame. So they are regular visitors to the Restore. And the women in the relationships are under, duress. We're not allowed to bring anything home that we didn't go there for because we don't need more stuff. So Emily's husband, Ben, is like, my husband, like, no, we don't really need that. But we kept going. And I think Ben and Emily I actually think it was out in the yard, in the back. And the guy said, you can just take it, which we wouldn't because we're Habitat for Humanity believers. But it was really wonderful. So they have a bedspread, a mattress frame and all that stuff. And I wonder about, they also have a paint line that gets redone. Is that something that everybody gets? And I don't know how to say that, but they get paint and you can buy the same color and there are lots of cans. It's not just a one-time donation. Am I articulating that well? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We get a recycled paint line. There are a couple of different ones that we have. So we...
That's it, recycled paint line.
It's recycled paint
line. Thanks for the phrase I was getting.
We have, there's a couple different vendors and we buy that wholesale and sell it retail. And we buy it at a very inexpensive price, and then we're able to sell it at a very affordable price
because paint is expensive. And for a couple like my daughter, who are a young couple starting out, it's such a valuable resource, and in a small town, because it's hard, you can't just go to like five resale stores.
And that's a durable, good paint, and I've used it and it works great. It's a one coat paint that's made from recycled product and environmentally friendly, and we love that.
They painted their whole CrossFit gym, excuse me, with the paint there. But they, forgot to say is, it's a mindset change that you have to try to reprogram your brain, and instead of going to get something new, check out Habitat for Humanity, have a store first. You can even call there and say, do you have any shade umbrellas? And they'll tell you what's on the floor. Do you have any picnic tables? Do you have any couches? I mean, they'll actually go out and do that. So, it just really cracks me up. And I wonder if people, the listeners, they never say they get tired of hearing this, but I say it a lot about the time flying when you're talking about good causes and good content and good people on the show that are doing really important stuff. You know, I love my role as Mrs. Green, and how could I not when we hear about this? It's one of my favorite charities in Tucson. I am involved in many ways, and when I couldn't give money and when I can't give money, I can always give time and get a place like Chapman to create a whole home build, and 65 employees come, so it's great. And I will not get off this show because Laura will be all over me without saying you can find anything you want to know about a very easy to navigate website, habitat.org. HabitatTucson.org. Facebook is Habitat Tucson, and Twitter is Habitat Tucson. And next week we have another repeat guest on the national show, October 24th, Greg Horn, Live Well, Live Your Best Life. It's going to be all about health and wellness and sustainability of your health. And just tell Laura Sanchez I thanked her for helping us with the prep of this. She's a pro. Everybody, thank you so much. T, thanks for the work you do, your leadership, and make it a great green week, everybody. Thanks for being a part of our world. Thank you.